Good evening, Tafalti Rosk, Gianul Gaelic Ansha, Chin Naked Shot Me. Welcome to another edition of the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM. This is Austin Camerton coming to you from down on Murray Street in the market in Ottawa. And if you're out there on the internet anywhere in the world, I hope you're catching us on www.chinradio.com or my website, thegaelichour.ca. This programme is brought to you in part by the generous sponsorship that we receive from the Irish Village Group of Companies, and I'm delighted to welcome on board tonight the Monterey Inn on Riverside Drive as an advertiser and sponsor, and that will help keep the show on the road for at least another while. It's a lot of fun putting the programme together, and it does take some financing, and I do appreciate the support that I receive from my advertisers and sponsors. If you visit the website, thegaelichour.ca, you will see there that we have a list of items going in. There's links to other organisations here in the city, and there's also a playlist for the music we play on the programme. And an archive section which includes all the programme's magazines that go back to 2005. And I leave the music programme up there for 1 week. We also put the schedule so as you can keep an eye on what might be coming up. And there's also, as I say, a calendar, and on the calendar you'll find some of the items listed. The Coltus session on Monday nights, which used to be at Rasputin's, has moved to Russian Doves, the Black Rose, down at the Heart and Crown premises, or the Irish Village premises in the market. And that is a wonderful place if you want to go. I was in there certainly last week and sitting around and listening to the traditional Irish music, and it's wonderful to have musicians just sit and play and enjoy themselves. And don't forget, on Sunday coming up at St. Bridget's, there will be the pancake breakfast, and that is at 10 o'clock. And the big thing coming up is Irish Day at the Super X, and that is on Saturday, the 16th of August, and the X will be have an Irish theme, so go on out there on the 16th, and you never know what you might find. But getting back, I must mention the Irish Village Group of Companies as well, because if you head down to the market, whether it be Wednesday, Thursday, Friday or Saturday, you'll find music at the Heart and Crown, Irish Village, Rushing Dove, somewhere in there, or over at the Poorhouse, or at the Heart and Crown on Preston Street. And the other thing that you should have on your calendar is on Saturdays at 4 p.m. There is Ghosts and Echoes of the Rideau, and that's going on also down at the Irish Canadian National Cultural Centre at the Old St. Bridget's, and that's at 4 p.m. on Saturdays. But we're in August and it tends to be rather quiet, but that's no reason why we wouldn't still be learning some Irish. So I think we're going travelling tonight with Lima Moenley.
Thiolit, my name is Liam O'Wenley. There are no books required for this course. Simply sit back and prepare to learn or relearn a range of Irish language expressions that you can then use in your everyday life. The featured words and phrases are easy to learn, lessons lasting approximately 10 minutes each. I will speak the phrase in English, and then I'll say the same thing in Irish. I will then go on to the next phrase. So, let's begin. Lesson 9. Travelling. First, let's look at road transport. Driving the car. Ag tomáint an chóir. Parking the car. Ag pórceáil an chóir. On the motorway. On motorvelach. Looking for a parking space in town. Ag lorg áit parcóla sa chathair. The traffic was bad. Vi an trocht gadunna. Now listen to these phrases and repeat. I was driving the car on the motorway. Vi meag tomáint an chóir an motorvelach. The traffic was bad in town. Vi an trocht gadunna sa chathair. Now try saying driving the car in town. Ag tomáint an chóir sa chathair. Now, some questions you might have when travelling by bus and train. What is the fare to Undangin? Cén táille le dul go dtí Undangin? Does this bus stop in Dunlaoghaire? An stopann an bus seo in Dunlaoghaire? How long is the journey? Cé chomh fada a thógann an turas? Where do I get off? Cén áit a hagan den mos? Can I see the train timetable? An féidirlum clár ama na trénach a eicáil. Where is the train station? Cáhfuil an stáisiún trénach? Now listen to these phrases and repeat. What is the fare to Dúnlaoghaire? Cén táille le dul go dtí Dúnlaoghaire? How long is the bus journey? Cé chomh fada a thógann an turas bus? Now try saying, how long is the train journey? Cén aid a thógann an turas trénach? Travelling by plane. My flight, I am flying, is first thing in the morning. Tá mé ag eitilt an chéad rud ar maidin. We have to check in 2 hours in advance. Cahamid seicáil isteach dhá uair a chloig, rim ré. I have one piece of hand luggage. Tá píosa amháin bagáiste láimhe agam. Now, listen to this phrase and repeat. I have to check in for my flight 2 hours in advance. Caha mé seicáil isteach don eitilt dhá uair a chloig rim ré. Travelling by ferry. Is there a car ferry? An bhfuil bád fear an tóireachta ann do Ghluaisteáin. How much is a round trip to Wales? Cé bhéad atá ar thuras fílte go dtí an bhreatain mhig? Where can I get the ferry to the Aran Islands? Cá bhí mé an bád go dtí na hoileáin Árainn? What time is the last ferry back to the mainland? Cén uair atá an bád deireanach arás chuig an mhórthír? Now listen to this phrase and repeat. Where can I get a car ferry to Wales? Cá bhí mé bád fear an tóireachta do Ghluaisteáin go dtí an bhreatain mhig?
Thank you.
That was Loretta Reed and a piece called The Beginning from her CD, The Children of Lir.
Hello there, this is Daniel O'Donnell here, and you're listening to the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM. Keep the dial where it is. The sun.
Fortune's Favour, the new album from Canada's own Great Big Sea.
Featuring the inspiring first single, Walk on the Moon.
Get Great Big Sea ringtones and more. Text GBS to 311 311. Data charges may apply.
Great Big Sea, Fortune's Favour, on sale now at all CD warehouse locations.
The little Irish village with the heart and crown is the ideal place to find a good pint in a warm atmosphere. A snug pub, cosy, well-appointed alehouse with an inviting fireplace and intimate coves for small groups. Mother McGinty's and Roisin Dubh, the Black Rose, complete the Irish village. Sit on the patio, enjoy the buzz of the market. If it's a planned party or a casual visit, the Irish village is the ideal spot. Music, food and drink in a welcoming atmosphere. It can only be the Irish village.
You're listening to the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Cameron. I've often said one of the reasons why I like to do radio is because the Irish have had a tremendous influence on the world in an awful lot of fields. And there's ordinary people out there doing ordinary jobs, but yet having a tremendous... They're ambassadors, not just for what they do themselves, but for who as people that we are. And I have one of those in the studio with me at the moment, and that's Liam Kilmurray. Liam, welcome to the Gaelic Hour.
Thank you.
This is Liam's first time and mine to cross each other's path. And I found out as we were chatting before we came on air that both of us came to Canada around the same time back in the late 80s. Liam, tell us a little about yourself, where you're from and what brought you to Canada to start with.
Well, I'm originally from the beautiful borough of Ballyfermot in Dublin, Dublin 10. And like many other people of my generation, we left in the mid to late 80s, usually going through England. And it was on the 12th of July, 1988, an auspicious date in Irish history for those who remember, that I met my now wife, Heather, in London, England. And a couple of years later, we came to Canada in the fall of 89, actually.
And of course, as you said, at that time, there was an awful lot of people left Ireland.
We were familiar with the sign, with the last person leaving, please turn the lights out.
So when you went to England, let's jump forward and then let's bounce back. What do you do today, and what is your career at this point in your life?
Currently, I'm a professor of anthropology and sociology at the University of Ottawa.
Now, that was not something you studied when you were at high school or at secondary school in Dublin.
No, not officially. And we were exposed to the prehistory of the country everywhere around us. So, no, it wasn't. And it wasn't a career I had embarked on intentionally. It just kind of fell my way.
So, give us a background on how you might have got from Ballyfermot to being the professor of anthropology at the University of Ottawa.
Okay. The first act, I think, was finding a coin in my back garden in Ballyfermot in mint condition that was dated to 1218 AD.
Wow.
And we were fascinated and thought we would be rich, but it turned out it was from Kuwait and it was about 8 years old in the 70s. They're on a different calendar.
Okay.
So it frustrated archaeologists from the get-go.
Okay.
But when I came to Canada in 89, I went part-time to university.
Okay.
Taking correspondence courses in anthropology because I was always fascinated with the study of culture. And I did my undergrad kind of off-campus correspondence night courses, and then got funding to do graduate studies in anthropology.
Right. I know as we were chatting also that you and I shared former employers from the early years, in that both of us started out at Capital Office Interiors. You worked for a while out there also.
I did, and I thought it was a wonderful example of the cohesive nature of Irish culture in the city.
Right.
You know, I was doing graduate work and I could only work 2 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And as many companies would say, no, we need someone full time.
Right.
But Mick McCarty, at the time said, you know, you can come here Tuesdays and Thursdays, the day you don't have classes. And I supported myself that way through graduate work at Carleton.
Right, right. And of course, that brought you in touch with some members of the Irish community as well, because there's a great fraternity revolving at that time around Capital.
Yes, it transpired that my interviewer and the boss at the time was actually from Ballyfermot. at the time, Richard Carey.
Yes.
And when he asked me what part of Dublin I was from, I hesitated. I was going to say Chapel, is it, or somewhere with a more auspicious postcode. But yeah, I had worked there, and I worked in the graduate bar at Carleton, and achieved my MA.
Right, right. So, and again, as I said at the beginning in the introduction, we as a people, there are some ordinary people doing extraordinary things. So, like, being an academic was not part of your background before getting to Canada in any way.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't really anyone's background from Ballyfermot, to be honest.
And what, aside from the Kuwaiti coin, what inspired you to take the step to say, I'm going to go and start studying?
I think it was the opportunity coming to Canada. An admixture of events, the ability to be able to afford to go and take courses, and just general interest in cultures. And also I thought, well, I've made the step of leaving Ireland for England, and then England for Canada, and then surely there must be something better I can do, you know, rather than work in construction or a bar.
Right.
So with encouragement from family, mm-hmm. And, you know, a bit of hard work, I thought, well, I'll undertake this to see if it will lead somewhere. And it was only part-time, as I say, it was correspondence. It wasn't something I'd intentionally planned until that day in 97 when I won a Commonwealth bursary to attend Cambridge, UK.
Okay.
And that really started the serious graduate work off.
So when that happened, that caused you to have to pull up roots again and head back over across the other side of the Atlantic.
Yes, we did. We left Ottawa, where we'd been at the time, and went to the UK to Cambridge. But it was a sort of an opportunity you couldn't pass up.
Yeah, and I'd say something, a totally different experience in every sense of the word from what you've ever had before.
Yes, very much so.
Because again, I would imagine Cambridge, it is world famous in it.
Yes.
A product of Cambridge carries an awful lot of credibility.
Yes, yes, it does help. And I did my MPhil there, and I finished my graduate work at Sheffield. But I was always conscious of the fact that, you know, I'm from Ballyfermot, and I wasn't intentionally trying to be an ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, there's not many of us, you know, have the opportunity to attend Cambridge, UK.
Right.
Sort of a select, you know.
Yes, university. Yes, yes, indeed.
So I knuckled down, and I worked harder that year than I think I've ever worked in my life.
So that was only 1 year over at Cambridge,
yes,
and then back to Canada.
No, actually, then I could have been 3 further years in Cambridge, but for my supervisor moved, so the next best supervision available was in Sheffield, UK.
Okay.
Which, although not as famous as Cambridge, had a great archaeology department and prehistory department. So I stayed there for 3 years and completed my PhD at Sheffield.
So that would have brought you and exposed you to things like Stonehenge, I would imagine.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that type of, that time period.
Indeed, indeed, yes. And England, like Ireland, is littered with many Neolithic sites. And that was my focus on my PhD, was prehistory of the Neolithic period.
Liam, we'll take a short break here and we'll play a little piece of music. And I'm going to let you tell us what we're going to play and why we're going to play it.
Well, after a discussion, I've chosen a tune called Dark Light by Davy Splann.
Right.
I'm sure many of our listeners will know him from Planxty. He's an exquisite Illan piper. And this tune is taken from the album A Place Amongst the Stones, and I've chosen it because it's very evocative of Irish landscapes, specifically prehistoric monuments.
Okay. You are listening to The Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM. We're talking to Liam Kilmurry, and we'll be back with you after this piece of music.
Thank you. The exciting Olympic countdown is well underway here in Beijing and around the world too. Here in China's capital city, a giant digital clock can be seen in Tiananmen Square, counting down second by second, minute by minute and day by day to the 29th Olympic Games, which will be held here from the 8th to the 24th of August this year. If you would like to get the latest news about this awesome event, check out this great website, www.crienglish.com. China Radio International, your bridge to China and the world.
August 16th is Irish Day at the Super X. Come along and see some Connemara ponies, Irish wolfhounds, Irish setters. Experience Irish music and dance. Listen to Robin Averill, the Cultus Cultoriere and Kelly Band. See Irish dancing, set dancing, and Kelly dancing. Come to the Irish Society booth. Find out about all the Irish organizations that are here in Ottawa. Get involved in the Irish community. Come to the Super X on August 16th and explore the Irish experience.
One man set himself the task 10 years ago of recording some of the old ways of farming that have virtually disappeared in his own lifetime. Michael Lyons from the parish of Taghmaconnell in South Roscommon.
This is the parish of Taghmaconnell in South Roscommon. I was born here. In the late 40s, my father was farming and out working for hire with horses, cutting hay and corn. At that time, most of the work on the farm was done by horses, except for the thrashing, which was done by either steam or tractor. In the early 50s, the tractor became more popular and the horse started to disappear off the land. My father taught me the old ways of farming, and this video shows some of these old ways, as well as the transition from horse to tractor and other aspects of life in rural Ireland at that time.
To purchase your copy of the Old Ireland DVD, visit www.thegaelicour.ca and follow the links.
Welcome back to the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Camerton, and we're talking to Liam Kilmurray, and Liam is attached to the University of Ottawa. He's actually a visiting professor at this time, and that was Davy Spillane, and that was one of Liam's choices. Liam, after Sheffield, what happened?
Well, I returned to Canada, yep. to Ottawa, and it must be mentioned at this point that my wife is also a professor.
Okay.
We were currently undertaking, undertook our PhDs at the same time, more or less, and she did a PhD in law at the University of Toronto, so we sort of leapfrogged back from Toronto to Sheffield and Cambridge, etc. And when we both graduated, we said, well, we'll go to the city with the best job offer, be it male or female.
Okay.
But in the back of our minds, because we'd lived in this city of Ottawa for 3 years, we thought this is an ideal place for kids.
Yeah.
And luckily, my wife got the full-time offer at U of O.
Okay.
And I was able to sneak in with a three-year contract. And I also worked part-time at Carleton.
Okay.
So between us, you know, as a family package, it worked that way. And we decided to settle here in the city of Ottawa.
Right, right. So I want to move along to what you do and get into a little bit of the study and some of the wealth of history that exists in Ireland. And if you'd share a little about that, some of the what you've studied and what you've found and what's there, the likes of Newgrange and other places like that. And tell us a bit about those.
Indeed. Well, for anyone who specializes in what's called prehistory,
right,
the archaeology of Western Europe, or is interested in megalithic architecture, monuments such as Stonehenge, built before the advent of metals. Ireland is the capital of the Atlantic facade of Western Europe. There are more monuments in Ireland than England, Wales and Scotland put together.
Mm.
So it's the mecca of Neolithic architecture.
Okay.
So in doing my graduate work, of course, you're drawn to the Boyne Valley.
Right.
Newgrange, Note, Dote,
mm-hmm.
or County Sligo, Carrowkeel and Carrowmoor.
Okay.
There are approximately 400 major passage graves in Ireland and thousands upon thousands of megalithic monuments. So anyone with a passing interest in that era of prehistory would immediately be drawn to Ireland.
So if you were to define what is the period that is defined as prehistory, from when BC to when BC, might be?
Well, it varies. Technically, in the anthropological / archaeological sense, it's before the advent of writing.
Okay.
So that distinguishes between historic archaeology and prehistoric. So prehistoric archaeologists in Ireland, for example, would be up until, perhaps the 3rd century AD.
Okay.
So the BC basically is a rough divider for prehistory in Ireland.
And to put a timeline in place, how far back has it been possible to establish credibly something that would qualify as that a human had done something in this area?
In Ireland?
Mm-hmm.
The earliest presence of man, with a capital M, including women, in Ireland is actually much later than Canada. We know we call ourselves the Old World and Canada the New World, but in Ireland, because we drifted away from the continent of Europe, I think the earliest occupation is somewhere around 7,000 BC.
Okay.
And it's not until around 4,700 BC that we find true conglomerations, communal settlements, and evidence of people altering the landscape.
Okay.
That's in the west coast of Ireland, actually, ironically, rather than the east, where you might expect to find the first evidences. And I think the main reason for that is also the title of a book by my former supervisor called Fragments from Antiquity.
Okay.
So when you're reconstructing the past, we're always missing things.
Mm-hmm.
It's partial. It's a partial record. But certainly the 4th millennium BC, from 4000 to 3000 BC in Ireland, was a period of dramatic, extravagant monumental architecture where, for example, the famous monuments in the Boyne Valley were constructed.
But if we go back to what you just said, that unexpectedly this would appear to have appeared on the west coast prior to the east coast.
Mm-hmm.
Has it been able to establish, or is any explanation why that might have been?
Well, the first caveat is possibly we just have not found any the earlier evidence in the east coast, and there's also an expectation that things moved from east to west.
Mm-hmm.
Sligo or Galway Bay archaeologists would argue that perhaps the first people from mainland Europe sailed around Ireland, north or south, and came in through Galway Bay and into Sligo, and there established their early communities such as Katie Fields or Carroll Keel.
Okay.
These monuments and settlements date to around 4500 BC.
Right. Is it possible that monuments were lost on the east coast because the land was a lot more arable?
That is certainly possible. Those that survive are usually away from urban settlements. But some of the megalithic structures were so vast that even if the stones are gone, they leave a trace in the soil in depressions beneath them.
Okay.
It's quite possible there's areas that we've not excavated, or they're on private property. Again, it's fragments from antiquity. West Coast archaeologists would argue that that is the center of our civilization, Sligo and Galway, which Dublin people find rather bizarre claim.
Well, coming from Galway, I have no problem with that.
You would agree with that?
I can understand that, you know, civilization started in Galway and probably has just progressed.
Really?
And
beyond the pale.
Into the pale. Following on in that vein, when you look at some of the areas that have architecture, and it is very, very advanced architecture, what conclusions have you been able to arrive at relative to some of this?
Well, again, we're talking about a period 4,000 years before the Christian era. And there's a wealth of information we can tell, but also because of the absence of the written word, it's highly interpretive and speculative. We're dealing with the material record.
Mm-hmm.
So human emotions and intentions are unknown.
Right.
We can only assume certain.
But you can certainly probably arrive at a conclusion that in order for some of these things to happen, there had to be a healthy population, not just physically healthy, but mentally healthy, and a healthy number. Mm-hmm. In a commune, in order to be able to produce something like this.
Yes, one should certainly think so, but again, there is an assumption. And the problem, if we take the famous monument of Newgrange yes. as an example, close to 200,000 tons of material, it's a trefoil passage grave with three corbelled recesses inside a corbelled arch roof. It's completely covered by a mound. Mm-hmm. It's a monumental undertaking. But do we say that 10,000 people built it in 6 months or 1,000 people in 6 years? It's very hard to deduce what level of intensity or whether they had a schedule they had to fulfill. But right. what we can say is that they were highly advanced. Newgrange has a structure known as the roof box. It's just above the main entrance itself, and it's one of the very few accepted astronomical constructs in Neolithic architecture, and that on the winter solstice, perhaps a day before and after, it permits the rising sun to penetrate into the tomb's interior and illuminate the three recesses within. So it's an astronomical achievement beyond belief for that time period.
Well, what I find interesting on that, because I spoke to Alec Rankin, and the one of the designs on the new War Museum is that there is a, on the 11th of November, the sun is due to come through and shine on the tomb of the unknown soldier. And Alec told me that that would hold through for 3,000 years.
Wow.
Because after 3,000 years, with the shift in the earth,
yes,
I think.
Yes.
But yet, it would appear somehow or other that in Newgrange, even though we're now at a 5,000 mm-hmm. period, that yes. it is still seems to conform.
Indeed. And,
which
indeed.
Is another amazing thing.
Yes, and a Newgrange estimated to be around 5,300 years old has a corbelled arch. So it was built in the days before knowledge of the true arch was available. So
right.
they built a corbelled arch, which is constructed by laying overlapping capstones in a sort of a beehive
right.
Formation. And it is bone dry to this day. And they cut wee grooves in the rocks for runoff of the water. And it is still bone dry after 5,300 years.
It is probably then, is it the best preserved specimen in the world of anything like that?
Certainly in passage graves.
Right.
I know Stonehenge gets perhaps a lot more media, but that's due to its location mm-hmm. In England. But I think amongst the prehistoric community, i.e. the archaeologists who study prehistory, Newgrange does occupy a special place.
So when you, excuse me, when you describe it as a passage grave,
mm-hmm.
what does that mean?
Well, there's a number of different Neolithic / megalithic structures. There are court cairns, usually located in Ulster. There are stone circles, or cromlechs, as they were once called. And most of them are in Munster, Cork and Kerry. And then there's wedge tombs in the centre of the country. So there's a regional variation to construction styles also. It's not absolute. We find outliers here and there.
Mm-hmm.
The passage grave itself, if you take off the mound, and in contemporary times they can and have just looked like a normal knoll or a hill.
Mm-hmm.
Big green circular mound. If you take off the turf and the sods, they're a stone alleyway built by upstanding orthostats with capstones forming a corridor, and then it opens out into a beehive mound with three recesses inside and a corbelled arch, and then it's all covered in shale and turf, and then a revetment wall of giant standing stones. The ones in the Boyne Valley are highly decorated and carved painstakingly with tri-spirals and triple spirals and lozenges. And the overall effect is something very mystical almost, to use a word I don't normally use. It's not an archaeological mm-hmm. word. But in Ireland, they are truly phenomenal monuments. And because of the passage, that's why they're called passage graves. And there's around 400 in Ireland itself.
Based on the description you've just given, I think it's an ideal time to lead into the next piece of music.
Indeed. And these places have been sometimes erroneously associated with the dead, and that was one of their functions. There are remnants and cremations found in them. And the next song is called Cuina Cuchulainn, which I believe translates as the sadness or the lament of Cuchulainn. And it again is by Davy Spillane.
And that's from, I think, his CD, is it A Place Among the Stones?
No,
this is from... Riverdance.
He played it on the Riverdance show, so it's from that CD that I have it.
And while I do say A Place Among the Stones, Davy Stubblan does have a CD which we're taking some of the tracks from called A Place Among the Stones.
Yes.
Which is very much what we're talking about.
Exactly.
You are listening to the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Camerton. We'll be back with you shortly.
Hey everybody, Alan Doyle and Bob Howell here from Great Big Sea.
You're listening to the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM.
Welcome back to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM. We're talking to Liam Kilmurray. Liam, you've shared a lot about your interest in the topic and the Neolithic tombs and all the rest of it. If someone was to go visiting Ireland and you were to give them some recommendations, if they said, I'm interested in going and finding a place among the stones, where would you tell them to go?
Well, a recent book uses the expression Greater Dublin, which incorporates Meath, much to the chagrin of Meath people, I should think. But it suggests that if you have an interest in this area, you're based in Dublin in a hotel or motel, and that County Meath is within easy driving access, and you have the Bend of the Boyne, or the Boyne Valley there, mm-hmm. which includes the sites of Newgrange, Noth and Doth. Mm-hmm. I don't think Doth is yet open to the public, but certainly Newgrange and Noth are. And Slievna Colliga, the Mound of the Witches, or as it's known, Loch Crew, is another phenomenal megalithic passage grave centre, and that's very close to the Boyne Valley, on the River Boyne, mm-hmm. some, 50 kilometres north of Dublin or so.
Not much more than that.
Not much more. And also, within 10 kilometres of that site, we have also Tara, mm-hmm. the ancient capital of Celtic Ireland, was chosen, many believe, because the Celts try to ingratiate themselves with the pre-existing Neolithic power, and Tara has a passage grave itself, the Mound of the Hostages, one of the last passage graves built, and that's certainly worth a visit. Very, very proximate to this is also Fornox, a smaller site with two passage graves, but one is exquisitely ornamented with megalithic incising and carving. So certainly one could occupy themselves in Meath alone, in terms of Neolithic archaeology.
So if I was in Dublin, like, and went to the tourist office and I asked about Neolithic tombs, they're adequately educated and aware, do you think, or would I need to be going somewhere else to ask? Because again, most tourists, when they go, they're going to go into the tourist office.
Yes.
And if someone goes over from Ottawa, they've been listening to you and they run straight into Tourism Ireland and Dublin and say, "We're on the Neolithic tombs."
Yes, yes.
The guy behind the counter said, "Huh?"
Hi. Well, you know, it's a good point, and one should be prepared. I know from personal experience that certain tourist offices will sell you a ticket on the bus to Newgrange, but that's not the same as having an access. Mm. And only 14 people can enter Newgrange at a given moment for the 25-minute guided tour. So certainly you would have to book it through Bord Fáilte or the Dublin Tourist Board or whomever the body may be.
So in other words, do research.
Oh, for sure.
Before you don't
want to go halfway to Ulster before finding out there's no actual access to the monument itself.
Right.
Oh, and a great website for someone who's interested and would like some pre-information on this would be www.note.com, and that's a gentleman from Meath who runs an extensive website on all the passage graves of Eastern Ireland.
Would it be fair to say that you guys in this field are members of an old boys club?
Old, yes. Ancient. I've heard the word ancient. Certainly a select group.
Right. Dame Kilmurry, I want to say thank you very much for coming in.
No, habitation.
And we're going to leave you with another piece of Davy Spillane music on the Eilean Pipes. And Davy is a wonderful musician. I know he's one of your favourites.
He is indeed. Yes,
Dame Kilmurry, thank you.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Camerton here on this wonderful Monday evening on the holiday weekend. I hope you had a wonderful holiday weekend and do come back tomorrow evening. Mary will be with you with an evening full of music. I want to thank the Irish Village and the Monterey Inn for their support in this programme. Without their help, this programme would not be on the air. If you want to catch the playlist, go on the website, thegaelichour.ca. If you want any requests, send me an email, austin@thegaelichour.ca. This programme will be available on the web, hopefully later in the week as an archive, as are all the previous programmes. And I want to thank Max on the other side of the glass for taking care of me also tonight. So until tomorrow night with Mary, this is Austin Camerton saying, slánga fóill.
That e'er I spend it in good company, and all the harm that I ever did, alas, it was to none but me. And all I've done for want of wit, to memory now I can't recall. So fill to me the parting glass, good night, and joy be with you all. If I had my